Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Peter Parsons from Blind Sports Nova Scotia. Tell me a little bit about Blind Sports Nova Scotia.
Well, we're a non-profit organization. Our board consists of all volunteers. We don't have any paid employees. It's all volunteer. I'm the chair of the board, and I also coach our junior goal ball teams, assistant coach actually, and also play on our men's team. And we're like I said, we're all volunteers, basically goal ball players and coaches and parents and. Involved with the group. And our main thing that we have going on is the sport of goal ball. We also have tandem cycling, which is more recreational, that one of our members, actually one of our female goal ball players, got going in the last couple of years, and it's going pretty strong for us. Right now, getting more people involved, some people who haven't... They ridden a bike in years because of their visual impairment that are able to participate in that. So that's a bit about Blind Sports Nova Scotia.
So for those who aren't as familiar with the sport of goal ball, can you give me an overview?
Sure. Well, goal ball is a Paralympic sport, first of all. Actually have a teammate who just flew to Rio last night. Simon Richard, his name is. Goal ball, it was created back after World War II for a sport for blinded veterans as a part of blinded war veterans as a part of the rehabilitation. And it became a Paralympic sport in 1976 and continues to this day. So there's two teams of... you can have up to six players on your team, three players on the court at once, and the court is actually the exact dimensions of a volleyball court, 9 meters wide by 18 meters long, and the net runs the entire width of that 9-meter court, and the nets are 4 feet high, so you have a crossbar that you actually use to square up to when you're taking your shot, when you're throwing the ball. The ball has to be on the floor before the high ball line, which is run 6 meters parallel to the goal line. So you square up to your net, you take your steps out, and get the ball on the floor before that high ball line. The opposing team has, of the three players, have to attempt to block the ball, usually by sliding on their side, stretching out their bodies to get in front of that ball. Because the catch with goal ball is that everybody's on an equal playing field because we're all blindfolded, or we wear what we call eye shades. So we're on that equal playing field. So whether you're totally blind or have low vision, like myself, I have around just under 10% vision, or fully sighted for that matter, we would all be on the same playing field. Now, to play internationally, you have to be legally blind, but... nationally, you're allowed one-sided player on the court at once for, say, your provincial team. or for a lot of the some of the open tournaments, there's no sighted player rule. Actually, at our nationals, it's one player on the court at a time that could be sighted. We don't happen to have any sighted players in our provincial team. We did a few years ago. We had a player who since moved to Alberta.
So, in your time with Blind Sports Nova Scotia, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
I'd say the biggest challenge is funding. It's because we playing goalball is very competitive when we travel a lot to tournaments, and you know, it's challenging to we get a small grant from the province every year, and we pretty much fundraise, do a lot of fundraising to get where we to get to the tournaments. And gym time can, you know, we got a pretty good deal on gym time, but we do have to pay for it here in Halifax. I'd say the funding, like, because volunteers come to us. We get a lot of volunteers through Dalhousie University, who have to put so many volunteer hours. And then we get some of them who, after they get their hours, they're so interested in the sport and volunteering with us that they continue to volunteer. So we're fortunate to get a lot of volunteers. And since starting the junior program, we have a lot of great parents involved as well, which is awesome. But yeah, you know, in goalball, I think we do a really good job here in Nova Scotia of recruiting players, because, you know, it's a numbers game. There's only so many blind and visually impaired people out there. Then there's only so many that, you know, might be interested in playing a sport, in particular a sport where you're throwing your body on the floor blindfolded at a ball that's coming at you, you know. So that sort of can sometimes dwindle the numbers low. But we have a men's and women's team, and also junior boys and junior girls team, which, you know, there's provinces out there like Alberta and Quebec who, you know, are large provinces. Alberta, they don't have a boys team for the juniors, and Quebec, they don't have a girls team for the juniors. So I think we're doing quite well having all the teams. Yeah, like I said, it's a bit of a numbers game, but as far as challenges, yeah, financial, like we do a good job with our fundraising, I have to say, as well. But sometimes, you know, you can only ask this so many people. You have to be creative with fundraisers. We have a great fundraiser coming up October 15th called the Janice Band Reunion. That's Terry Kelly, who's a local blind singer who's done well over the years. It's like his high school band reunion. And that's actually in partnership with the APSE Auxiliary. It's a split fundraiser, and that should be a good fundraiser for us.
So what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
The greatest success. There's a few successes that come to my mind, like winning the Nationals the last 2 years. Like, I guess from different perspectives, like, so as an athlete, winning the Nationals in back-to-back years has been a great experience. We've also won the Michigan tournament, which is considered by many the top in North America, because you have all the top U.S. teams there and all the top Canadian teams go there. We've won that 3 years in a row, which is kind of unheard of. So very proud of those achievements. But you know what gets me really excited as well is I played a large role in getting the junior program going. So I think the success we've had with, because we didn't have junior goalball in Nova Scotia up until like 3 years ago, we started a girls team, and last year we had a boys team for the first time. So with all the success of our men's team, I get as excited about our juniors and our women's team as well, who continue to improve and develop. They actually won the Michigan tournament last year. They picked up a player from Ontario who's on the national team, and that just pushed them over the top in that tournament to win that tournament. But they're getting more and more competitive. And we've really grown over the last few years, our organization, to getting more like junior go ball programs going, the tandem biking program, because, you know, go ball isn't for everyone. But at the same time, it's like a sport that's, you know, its own sport compared to other blind sports where, you know, they have their sighted counterparts. So I think that's why goal ball is their main focus. And it's what kept blind sports going over the years. There's always been a group of goal ball players keeping it going over the years because, you know, years ago before my time, I've been here involved like for the last 10 years or so, there was, you know, a lot of track and field going on here in Nova Scotia in the 70s and 80s. And but, yeah, so goal ball, we got something really strong going here in Nova Scotia. We're building it, have built and continue to build a strong goal ball program.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Joanna Zien. She'll be updating us on her support of events surrounding Crohn's and colitis. So tell me, what's the latest in terms of events surrounding your support of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation?
Well, I'm going to take advantage of the spotlight here and share a couple things. First is we have our fashion show fundraiser coming up at Arius Nightclub on September 16th, featuring scenes from exclusive clothing. It's an international clothing store located on Howard Avenue, and we've also got the very popular and high-end Victoria Boutique. And another very popular store, Amour Boutique, located at Windsor Crossing, which I'm sure you've all been to. So I'm really excited about the event coming together, and I know it's going to be a really great one. We had one in the past that was wonderful, and I know that the momentum for this one has grown even bigger. So again, it's on September 16th, and the doors open at 9 o'clock. We're just asking for a $5 donation at the door if you're walking in, or you can call ahead to Arius to RSVP under my name, which is Joanna Zien, and the phone number is 519-980-4002. And even if you RSVP under the guest list and don't pay cover, as long as you show up at the door for our event, Arius will contribute $5 to Crohn's and Colitis Canada on behalf of you attending. So that's really great, and they're doing such a generous thing. And I'm really excited for that event. Another thing is, I'm sorry if I'm ranting on, but I'm really excited about this too, is in the past, we had a really big income earner. It was a bingo. And I'm sure you've heard of these fundraisers in the past. Like, bingos are very popular, especially among the school board. But Crohn's and Colitis Canada does one as well. And we're looking for volunteers in the Chatham, Ontario area to be runners and to sell bingo cards. So we would need 2 volunteers per shift for 2 to 3 shifts per month. If you know somebody that's interested or you know somebody from Chatham, please visit our Facebook page, which is Crohn's and Colitis Canada, Windsor Chapter, and share the post that pinned at the top. Thanks a lot, Cam, for giving me the time to share some updates from Crohn's and Colitis Canada.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
CJAM 99.1 FM proudly acknowledges the ongoing support of Leuna 625, the Laborers International Union of North America. Every year, Leuna 625 contributes financially, fundraises, and volunteers for numerous charitable, social, and cultural activities that have established our region as an outstanding place to live, work, and play. Leuna 625 builds better communities, better jobs, better careers, and better security.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells, Earlier in our show, we heard from Peter Parsons from Blind Sports Nova Scotia, and we got an update on the latest Crohn's and colitis happenings with our good friend Joanna Zien. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Lindsay Heichel from Hikewood. So tell me a little bit about Hikewood.
So Hikewood Therapy Services, we founded 4 years ago in 2012 by myself and my husband. And we provide occupational therapy services specializing in hypotherapy treatment strategy. And hypotherapy, basically, we use the horse's movement to produce results in our clients. So anything that is neuromotor related.
So in terms of the therapy itself, it forms a connection between the animal and the person.
Correct, yes. And hypotherapy is pretty unique. It has to be performed by a registered therapist, so an occupational therapist, a physiotherapist, or a speech-language pathologist. And it differs from other equine-related activities in that no riding skills are taught. So it's not the client trying to produce movement out of the horse. It's the horse's movement enticing a response out of the client, basically.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
It's a lot of word of mouth. It requires a lot of education, actually. So that's a big part of spreading the word, because not a lot of people know what hypotherapy is. So it's educating clients, service clubs, family members, and other healthcare professionals, such as pediatricians, and kind of connecting with the other therapy centers out there that don't necessarily provide hypotherapy, but they provide occupational therapy in a different capacity, so more traditional clinical setting.
So in your time with Hikewood, have there been any challenges that you've seen?
Yes, we've faced many challenges. Foremost probably would be the cost. So as you know, horses are extremely expensive, and in consideration of the resources required, such as the horse itself and their maintenance, so things like the vet, the farrier, the food, the accommodation, all that kind of thing, and it's incorporating all those costs but not necessarily passing them down to our clients in order to be accessible to everyone. Things like Mother Nature that we can't really control, because it is an outdoor activity, and although we do have a riding facility, indoor riding facility, we still have to battle cold, heat, as well in consideration that a lot of our clients have difficulty regulating their own body temperatures, so we have to, it's almost more of an extreme to that respect as well. We challenges like funding sources, because all our clients, they're engaged in many therapies, as well as having to purchase expensive equipment, so it's kind of helping them out in finding those resources. Scheduling is a big thing, so we have to schedule according to the client's schedule, the parent's schedule, their siblings, as well as my own schedule, so kind of juggling a couple other jobs as well to kind of supplement, since it is so limited in time. And probably the non-billable hours are pretty challenging too. So Hikewood is, it is their business, and I do it on site at my house. However, there are behind the scenes, we have to maintain the property, maintain the horses, and do regular training. So we train the horses every day. We work with them outside of therapy sessions as well. So yeah, those are some of the challenges we face.
So to look at the converse side of things, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
Oh, every session is a success moment for me. Every time you see one of our clients smile or enjoy the moments with the horses, it's extremely rewarding. It makes everything worth it.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for Hikewood?
Continuously. We were always working on developing new programs So actually recently, yesterday, I developed a fall program that we're going to do a social skills club. So that's going to be run in the evening where there would be, say, four clients that would come out at once and they would work on their social skills and also equestrian skills. So that's one project on the horizon. And then we've got a new initiative coming up next year, working with war veterans, so with PTSD and communicating with their spouses. So that's one exciting thing for next year.
So if you could send any one message about the need for this sort of therapy to become more recognized, what would it be?
It would be probably communication about hypnotherapy, so the whole education piece, just really getting the word out there on what the benefits are, the kind of commitment required to participate in it, as well as the benefits of the horse, the movement that they provide, and the whole connection that they can provide us.
So how does the community typically respond to your work?
They typically respond, they're surprised that it exists. It's kind of a unique thought when it comes to their heads. They often say, oh, I didn't even think of that. I always thought, yeah, animals are obviously good therapeutically. However, they don't think of the horse as being mounted activity and working through the neuromotor component. So, but they receive it very well. So they come out and they try it out and they do see the benefits through their participation.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
I find it just fascinating about Hike Wood, in so much as you always hear about therapeutic riding. You hear that it benefits someone whose muscles might not be exactly where they should be, but you don't actually think about it from the standpoint of the horse. You don't actually stop to consider this animal has to be trained, and they have to go through a neuromuscular process themselves. But the fact that Hikewood is taking this into consideration, it really is an amazing thing, because not only are they benefiting their clients, they're benefiting the animal as well. Fact is, in therapeutic riding, there has to be a bond, a connection between the rider and the animal. Just so the muscular transmission can be as effective as possible. If they're both comfortable, odds are they'll get the best results. And honestly, very pleased to hear that. But the fact that they do a lot of the work out of their home speaks to the devotion, the heart they have for this work. Fact is, disability improvements and programs can't just be a half-hearted approach. Can't just be, oh, I do this, it's my job, I get a paycheck for it, blah, blah. It has to come from a place where you really want to make it work, where you put in the extra time, the extra devotion. And then, and only then, do you start to make a real difference. Because you see it from the standpoint of, this is, to me, it's a job. But to them, it's day-to-day life. And what I choose to do, stand beside them, can make all the difference. Am I going to choose to put my heart and soul into this work? Or am I going to just say, it's a job, it essentially means a paycheck to me? The best disability groups, my dear friends, are the ones that talk about expansion, taking the next step, taking on the next project, and that really sound excited about it, really sound like they want to do it. Ones that say, we want to work ourselves out of existence. We want to see a future where these kids grow up without having to worry about these conditions. But as I've said a million times before, it is not a matter of finding an immediate cure. It's a matter of steps, making things a little bit better each day. If we can do that progressively, a condition that once seemed hopeless is now manageable, or even better, just seen for what it is. One factor in a person's life, one piece of who they are. If you look at a person's condition alone, you miss a lot of the picture. Fact is, it's not fair to a person with a disability just to put that label and say, oh, this is a person with autism, or oh, this is a person with blindness. There are many things beyond that. An intelligent person, potentials, hopes, dreams, loved ones, a job, who knows? But the truth is, we cannot simply allow ourselves to put half-hearted efforts into making it work for people with disabilities. Now, in the first half of the show, Peter talked about the sport of goalball, which is something unique to people with vision impairments. No one gets out there and has an unfair advantage. Everyone's playing on an equal footing. And it sounds like an amazing sport. It's not something you generally hear about, as part of the Paralympics may be. But I maintain, week to week, day to day, people with disabilities are out there doing their thing. They're engaging in their sport. They're doing what they love to do. And I think equal representation should at least be offered. They choose to say, yeah, we do this, but we don't want to make it public. That's fine. That's up to them. But there should be a fair bit of representation. With the Paralympics, there should be an equal amount of coverage to the Olympics. The world should stop and take notice. They should say, these are great athletes. They train as hard, if not harder, than their able-bodied counterparts. So why in the world are we taking one difference in the game, blowing it so out of proportion, and choosing not to look upon the talents of these people? My opinion makes absolutely no sense. I'm pleased to note that NBC is going to be providing some Paralympic coverage. But, as I've said, that's one event. It's a turkey bone. It's taking notice of one of the major events. And that's what we tend to hear about most often in society. But look behind the scenes, my friends. Look beyond the obvious. You can hear the same Paralympic stories over and over again. But ask the questions. What do these athletes do to keep themselves in shape? What do they do day to day in terms of their training, their sport? Goes on every day of the week. Fact is, all we have to do is recognize this. Just giving them this moment once every 4 years, it's not enough. Because these athletes, they put their heart, their soul, their lives into what they do. And they're trying just to do what they love to do. To them, it's not about inspiring others or being on the center stage. It's about athletic expression. And the truth of the matter is, that's how it should be in disability life. Whatever it is that speaks to you, whatever it is that matters the most, is what you should always just follow. As a person with a disability, your interests, your hopes, your dreams, they're unique. Why? Because you're a person first. Disability is one factor of who a person is, but it's not the whole show. It's far from it, in fact. The truth is, the more we recognize that these are not just capable people, but diverse people, the better we'll be as a society. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.